Welcome to the Data Points Podcast, where we talk all things data and government. I'm your co-host, Eric Reese.
And I'm your other co-host, Sharon Paley. Today, we'll be joined by Catherine Klosik, who is the Director of Applied Research here at GovX and a familiar voice on the podcast. Kat and I will be talking with Dr. Krista Mamari from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health.
And also joined by Anushka Jajodia, who is a social design fellow from the Maryland Institute College of Art, or MICA. Their discussion is really focused deeply on food insecurity and how it relates to youth behavior in Baltimore.
We'll also discuss how the team of Catherine, Kristen, and Anushka are taking a multidisciplinary approach, including design, to understand and map systemic barriers to food access and develop a process to put this valuable research into action. So join us as we go to the interview.
Kristen, so, I mean, here we are at the holiday season, and we hear a lot about food insecurity issues, particularly at this time of year. So I think this is a really good time for us to be having this conversation. Can you tell us what some of your findings from your food insecurity among adolescents in Baltimore study were?
I'd be happy to. So this summer, we actually collected data among adolescents from the ages of 14 to 19 from six selected neighborhoods in Baltimore City. And we actually trained youth to be our researchers. So in each of these neighborhoods, youth actually facilitated focus groups. And in some of the cases, they were separated between boys and girls so that we could understand whether there were some differences in how adolescents are coping with food insecurity. What we found was really interesting. First of all, that food insecurity is a very common and widespread problem among adolescents, but it carries with it a lot of stigma. And one of the things that adolescents across all the neighborhoods mentioned was that it was very difficult and embarrassing for them to go into food pantries and soup kitchens to get donated food. They also described food at their schools, because some of the schools had school pantries, as being smelly, jail food, they called it. So instead of going to these places, it was easier for them to get money through some very high-risk behaviors. So, for example, across all the neighborhoods, girls told us that they would prostitute to get money for food. And this was far easier than for them to go into any of these food pantries. Boys, on the other hand, would shoplift or they would sell drugs, which they called trapping, to get money for food. So when we asked them, well, what can we do to address this? One of the interesting things is that because this is such a stigmatizing problem, they said that whatever strategy we come up with, it has to be framed within a broader economic challenge barrier for adolescents. And they recommended that other types of services be provided to them rather than just food. So some of the most common types of services were job training. They mentioned that if they could have a safe way to make their own money, they would do that, and that would allow them to buy food. So those were kind of our big shocking, I guess, findings that we found that they were pretty upsetting to hear about, especially given that we live here in the United States and this is happening in our own backyard.
Yeah, it's extremely distressing information. So if we can also like pivot now to Kat, how did you become aware of this research that Kristen's done? I mean, obviously we're all here in Baltimore, so it's super relevant to the city where we live. And then how did you think about starting this MICA Social Design Fellowship Program? And what's the goal of around this research and how it's integrated into the fellowship?
Yeah, so I became aware of Kristen's research. Kristen and I have collaborated on a few projects here in Baltimore City through her role with the Center for Adolescent Health and the Bloomberg American Health Initiative here at Johns Hopkins University. And almost simultaneously, we became aware, or the opportunity arose, to collaborate with MICA, the Maryland Institute College of Art, on this, their social design fellowship. And so what we thought would be great, since all these threads seem to be coming together, and we also had a collaborator from the Department of Civil Engineering at Hopkins, actually two collaborators from that department, we decided that it would be really great to kind of bring all these threads together. So this project is actually part of a larger initiative, our applied research work at GovX, that seeks to understand and, where possible, minimize barriers between researchers and practitioners in order to help bring research and evidence into practice. And so that's really the idea behind this project, is to work with Anushka, who we'll hear from in a moment, who's a MICA fellow, to really develop an understanding of the landscape of food and security work here in Baltimore. And the other piece of that is Anushka and the team is going to be going out and interviewing some of the organizations and individuals that are working on food insecurity, particularly among the adolescent population here in Baltimore City, and asking about sort of what barriers they see, which is structural barriers they see to adolescents accessing food. And that'll inform some analytical and modeling work that the civil engineering folks are going to do later on. And then the other kind of question that we want to ask of these informants is to get a little bit of a sense of kind of how they learn about sort of this type of research and these findings, whether they observe these patterns in their work as well, and to try to build hopefully a toolkit or a set of practices that can help nonprofits and other organizations access research and put research into action in their work. And that's something that I'm really excited about. So this project is going to have outcomes for Baltimore and hopefully for other communities as well. And now I have a question for Anushka. So we started working together just in the course of this project. So I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit more about your journey and how you ended up working in social design and a little bit about your experience in that.
Well, sure. And thank you for having me here. So just to give a little bit of background, I graduated as a graphic designer around 2.5 years ago. And soon after, I found myself drawn towards social impact and change, and which sort of sparked from some of my projects during college, where I interacted with community members and worked with Dhobi Ghat, which is like a laundromat in Bombay. And I saw how I'm really drawn towards talking to people and understanding their experiences and stories. And soon after, I started collaborating as a freelance designer with different nonprofits in India, specifically Bombay and Bangalore. And it was, I think I really had a lot of fun working alongside different field researchers, both quantitative and qualitative, curriculum developers, managers. And I used to accompany them on a lot of site visits. And I started noticing a gap between graphic, like between the skills that I was sharing. I felt like I wanted to contribute more, and I was sort of limited in just the scope of graphic design. And also I started wondering if I was getting too attached to my design, and started creating stuff which I thought was helpful for the community rather than actually speaking with the co-creators in the community. And that's when I realized that I holistically want to contribute to social impact. And with that intention, to look at the bigger picture of social change, I ended up coming to MICA. To just give a background about HCD, there are a few steps that fall under that. It starts with training and planning, leading on to research, then synthesis and ideation, prototyping and implementing in research. The HCD process is heavily based on insights from qualitative research, which thrives as a multidisciplinary set of approaches and is a very collaborative set of approach which results in a more holistic and meaningful outcome. And here, they really value the lived experiences of members from the community who are constantly involved in all the steps of the human-centered design and the process, because we are creating solutions for these people who are impacted by the issues. And it sort of provides a gateway to imagine really new possibilities while promoting the value of design and advancing equity and social justice. And to build on that, I would like to share a tool that we've been recently using at MICA, which is by the Creative Reaction Lab. And it sort of has these four different components, in which is under the equity-based community design. The first one is inviting diverse co-creators, which are the people who are impacted by these issues, and getting a lot of insights and needs from them. Then acknowledging the history and healing and any social or economical disparity that they see, or what is it that impacted their lives in the past. And then, of course, building immense empathy and humility while working with them in the community. And in the end, acknowledging power constructs and any social disparities before even creating interventions for them. And I sort of want to reflect back on my experiences working with an NGO in India called Mentor Together. And I noticed how some of the SCD principles do align with their framework. So it's a youth mentoring organization. And they do emphasize a lot on how the mentee plays a very essential role in creating their own mentorship. And it's not very prescriptive by the mentor. And I see and I notice how some organizations have started valuing the idea of HCD, and it may just be a matter of really strengthening that for them. And some organizations really need to be exposed to HCD. But I would like us to, I would just like to leave us with a question and to just acknowledge the fact that co-creation with the community members is a very strong and essential tool for HCD.
Thank you, Anushka. That's really helpful because I know that folks are definitely hearing about human-centered design and social design, and it is popping up in different places, as you acknowledge. So it's great to hear a little bit more about just what it is and where it shows up. And just one more question for Kristen. So if you wouldn't mind telling us just, you know, back to your food insecurity among adolescents in Baltimore study, can you talk a little bit about the types of organizations that you started to share these findings with and some of the responses so far?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the first audience that we shared these findings with were our funder. And so this study was funded through the Bloomberg American Health Initiative. So we have these quarterly work group meetings, so that was on the docket for one of these meetings, and there was a lot of enthusiasm for thinking of what we can do about this issue. And consequently, Josh Sharstein, who's the director of the Bloomberg American Health Initiative, then organized a meeting with us to go over to the Family League of Baltimore City, who have done in the past some work among feeding programs with youth. And so we shared the findings with them. And then since then, we've had kind of broader discussions with researchers. So, for example, we had a forum as part of the American Public Health Association conference in San Diego. And so these findings were shared there. And then subsequently, I've had some meetings with other adolescent health researchers at the school and have talked about that. But on kind of a bigger vision, youth were so much a part of this study. They helped design it. They helped collect the data. And so as part of our Bloomberg American Health Initiative, we have a youth advisory board. And so four of those members actually were researchers for this. So one of the things we're doing in the new year is we want to organize a community meeting with some of the rec centers that were part of this. So we actually hosted the focus groups in some of these community rec centers, and we'd like them to be part of it and to really bring it into the community, because as Anushka was saying, it's really vital for whatever we do to have the community buy-in and for them to be a part of the decision-making process. So that's what we are working on in the upcoming 2019 year.
Well, of course, we wish you a huge amount of success with this project, Kristen, and I think it would be great to have you back on the podcast to do an update on what kind of interventions and results you're getting from the work that you're now going to actually undertake in the field. That would be exciting for me and our listeners, I think. So that would be great to have you back. Thank you both for joining us. And we wish you guys and all of our listeners a very happy holidays and new year.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Data Points.
If you're interested in learning more about the contents of this podcast, please check out our show notes for further links and information. And if you want to learn more about what we're doing here at GovX, please go to our website, govx.jhu.edu, or follow us on Twitter and Instagram at gov_ex. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you next time to find out where the data points.